the Cree Indians could run across the tundra and the plain, hunting fish like for 14 hours a day, no problem. Nowadays, they're all sick with diabetes. Why? Because we changed their diet. They wanted to put that kid, who was only 9 years old, by the way, on drugs.
How many boys are put on something like Ritalin or Adderall because simply their routine is off, they're not getting enough sleep, they're watching too much screens, they're eating the wrong food, like you name the thing.
So in these quote-unquote sort of problem kids, what percentage do you think we're eating sugary, crappy cereal 100%. In the morning? 100%. 100% we're eating crap for breakfast.
You have parents that are exhausted, overworked, feel like they're at their wits' end. So like, I can't wake up early enough to make breakfast. So I'm going to pour this thing of cereal. And then you think you have a problematic kid. So then you drug your kid instead of just waking up. And maybe it's going to sound judgmental. Wake up 10 minutes early and crack a couple eggs in a pan.
You know what I think we should make parents do? Go ahead, pop a couple Ritalin and see how you feel. And then decide if you want your kid on that.
Things that seem like hurdles are going to be so much better for your family to where you're not medicating your small child. Hello, everybody. You are listening or watching Chatting with Candace. I'm your host, Candace Horback. Before we jump into the episode, hit that like and subscribe button. It helps me out a ton. It helps me beat the algorithm and grow this little podcast that could. This week, we have Reed Davis joining the podcast. Reed is a board-certified holistic health practitioner, a certified nutritional therapist. He's an expert in functional lab testing and holistic lifestyle medicine. He's the founder of Functional Diagnostic Nutrition, or FDN for short, and his courses, he have over 4,000 graduates in 50 countries. This is a great episode for January to get your health on track. If for all of you that are confused as to where to begin, what do I do? What labs are worth my money? Where is my baseline and how do I get better? This is a great episode for you. I hope you enjoy it. Please help me welcome Reed Davis. Reed Davis, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. I'm really excited to learn from you.
Well, thanks for having me, Candace. I'm glad to be here.
So I was just saying before we hit record, I was really excited that this happened to be scheduled for January because I feel like so many people, including myself, we kind of let ourselves go during the holidays and it's the excuse of cookies and pie and family, which that one is a good one, but we let our routines and our workouts and kind of everything fall by the wayside. So January comes and everyone has their resolutions.
And yeah, this time of year, isn't it?
It is. So I guess starting with labs, I think that's a really good place to start for most people. I think a lot of people have probably never had a real intensive lab. They have no idea what's going on under the hood and they kind of just jump into it. So can we get into the importance of foundational lab work and then what you would recommend to somebody who's just getting started?
Well, the foundational labs that we have worked with for over 20 years are critical. They're foundational to health. They tell you what you need to work on and they direct how you would work on it. And so, you know, I teach a course in functional lab work as it applies to all natural or developing all natural drug-free protocols for anyone with any condition. So that means no matter what's wrong with you, you usually in this world, other than the infectious diseases, you've lived yourself into that problem. So you've distorted, you've upset the apple cart, your hormones, your immune system, digestion, and so on. So the labs tell you how to fix it. And they're just critical. I couldn't imagine doing anything without them. You know, we all run labs on ourselves all the time, so we get the data.
So are you looking at micronutrients, hormones, thyroid? Like, how minimal of a lab can someone get to where it's like a good jump off point without maybe doing the whole shebang and spending, you know, $5,000, $6,000 on some crazy labs?
I have an acronym that I developed over a period of time. It's HIDDEN, and that spells hidden. And many of these things are hidden, so it's kind of cute. And that stands for hormone, immune, digestion, detoxification, HIDD, and then energy production and nervous system balance are also critical. So, you know, over this long period of time, I developed a system of investigation, hormone, immune, digestion, detoxification. And you can do all of this with just five labs. Now, that might sound like a lot, but it's the best investment you could make in getting the data that's your data. It's critical for each individual to understand where are their hormones? What's going on with the immune system? Is it overactive, underreactive? What about the digestive system? Is it working? All that expensive food you're eating, paying all that extra money for that and supplements too, you know, is it getting actually absorbed into your body? And of course, you know, a lot of health complaints are around poor digestion. And then on the detox, it's so easy to do these tests and to check and see, is your liver properly filtering and detoxifying everything? So the answer to your question, no, we don't do nutrient testing much, not at first anyway, or genetic testing. We look at the real hardcore functional measurements that tell us what's really wrong. And that came out of my story of, you know, how I started in the business and being a good investigator.
So do you think with the genetic testing that sometimes, is there a good reason to hold off on those if you don't have any signs of a problem? Because if you, I love Joe Dispenza's work. I've read all of his stuff. And I really think that there's a lot that we don't know, but we do know that the mind is extremely powerful. And then it can affect how our symptoms show up, how our illnesses show up. So maybe you're doing great and then you find out you have a gene mutation for, let's say, like ocular degeneration of some sort. And then now that's in the back of your mind that you're going to lose your vision when you get older. Can it do more harm potentially if you are predisposed to like worrying or neurosis or maybe just like a negative mind, like a more of a pessimistic mindset?
That matters. And I like Joe very much. I've met him and listened to him a lot, have his books as well. And the mind matters. And at the same time, genetic testing, which was the question, it's the Human Biome Project, which discovered how many genes we have and all these things, was kind of disappointing in the long run for practitioners. And another thing about the gene testing is they might show propensities. Because, mm-hmm. You know, your dad had colon cancer, you have the gene for colon cancer. Well, you want to pay a little extra attention and not mm-hmm. get colon cancer. Mm-hmm. And so that could be important. At the same time, there's no before and after on gene testing. They'll never change. The ones you have are the ones you have. You can't pick your parents or your grandparents or anybody. So the tests that we do are more foundational than that. They're functional. It's how am I, you know, with all my genes, the genetic potential is what matters, genetic potential. And how is that expressed? Well, it's through your interaction with the environment. So it's really epigenetics. That's the science that we study more than the genes, because you can't change your genes. Again, you can't pick your parents or grandparents. And some things, and I'm reading right now a book that your listeners might like. It's called Pottinger's Prophecy. It's about the work of Francis Pottinger, who was a great, great scientist at the turn of the last century. You know, some of his most important work was written in 1915, 1920, 25. And that's the stuff that we can have an effect with a person, you know, on. So again, the hormones, immune system, digestion, how's your body working right now? How's it interacting? How are you, as your genetic potential interacting with the world in your environment is more important. So if you have any condition, chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia or migraines or diarrhea, you know, I mean, it's how are you interacting with the world now? Now, so not to put down gene testing, it can be very helpful in troubleshooting later on. But if you don't get your act together, basically, you know, with these areas that are very easy to test, most of them are at-home testing, Candace, and they're not expensive. And what I did as a layperson, I came into the field from environmental law and conservation. So I'm a good investigator and, you know, fair, I'll say. But I wasn't a practitioner. I wasn't a doctor. So I had to look at health as an investigative process. And I spent 10 years in a lab, in a practice, in a clinic, running thousands of labs on thousands of people. And I made some discoveries, and really I just identified patterns because I'm good at that, and came up with a system that anyone can use. So that's the important part for me, being kind of blue collar minded, is how do I put the power in the hands of the people? Mm-hmm. And it's to running these simple at-home tests that you can run them yourself. You can, I mean, you should get trained, but you could look at your markers and how am I doing? Besides just how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't go by symptoms because they don't really matter. They're not the problem. They're the result of the real problem. So mm-hmm. I think if you're getting what I'm saying, we can be more in control. Why put your health in someone else's hands when you can be in control of it yourself?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are trying to figure out how to do just that, because it can be really frustrating when you do go to more traditional routes of medicine or going to the doctor's office. And even with labs, like if you have an issue and you show up and you get your lab results back, you have such a big range of what is acceptable for so many things and what might look fine if you, for example, get your thyroid panel done and you're on the low end of acceptable, but you're like, I feel terrible. They're not going to do anything for you. They're just going to say, well, you're in normal range. So it's almost like even the way that modern Western medicine treats labs, it's just very brush it all off unless you're critically out of range in some way.
Exactly. So I'm currently been producing a series called Science Matters. You could look it up somewhere. And with a very prominent physician, I go over certain studies that are being done. And it's just the contrast between the way those people think of things, the way I think of things, is amazing. So everybody in our book is a study of one. And there's no cohort. I'm not a cohort. I'm a individual person. And that's something I recognized 1999, you know, 24 years ago, when I first got into this field. I was in environmental law, conservation, saving the whole planet, you know, air, birds, water, trees, bees. And I decided to turn my attention to people, Candace, and what about, you know, I saw how bad the environment was treating the world. And I wondered, what about me? You know, like I was healthy, but I didn't want something sneaking up on me. So I changed jobs. I went into this clinic, and I went in to run the business. That's what I was hired for. But I started taking classes and really getting interested in the clinical side. And it was amazing how many people were just lost. They were stuck in that cycle of trial and error. They'd been to a practitioner, a lot of them, and been told nothing's wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's all in your head. You know, like as if, you know, headaches are just an aspirin deficiency, you know, treating everything with a pill. And I was out riding my motorcycle one day, and I just really came to this realization, two major ones. One was, why are these people putting their health in someone else's hands? They need to get in control. And then, well, how do you get in control? And I decided, as nuts as it sounds, I'm going to be the last person they need to see to get their health back. And I started running labs and looking at underlying causes and conditions. And I did that for 10 years in that clinic, became kind of well known for the level of lab work that I was doing. And then I systematized it so that anyone can do it.
So do you see an uptick in food sensitivities, and I guess specifically gluten, with, because you were an environmental lawyer, things like glyphosate, pesticides, things of that nature? Like, is it the gluten, or is it the chemicals that we are spraying on the gluten that we allow within the states?
Well, it's both. And so let me put that in context of our protocols. So not only have I systematized an intake system to really discover key functional markers that you got to have these things in order. These things have to be working the way they were designed. By the way, there's no, like Joe says, the design is perfect. So we don't have to teach any cells what their job is. They know what it is, right? But so then once we do the investigation, then what? And this addresses your question. It's I have another acronym. I had the HIDDEN, the hidden stressors and contributors to metabolic chaos. You sort all that out. Well, then what? You use it to describe or make a protocol, which is DRESS, diet, right for that individual, rest, which is beyond sleep, more than just sleep, diet, rest, E is exercise, and then the two S's, DRE, diet, rest, exercise, stress reduction, and supplementation. And so on your question about glyphosates and food sensitivities, those are all hidden stressors. You know, they become part of your stress reduction. What can I do to reduce stress? Well, it's not all mental and emotional. You know, yeah, you can get rid of bad people in your life. And if you need to separate from certain influences, yeah, get away from bad people. People make you feel bad. But beyond that, there's the environment, which is where I originally came from. Which so there are glyphosates and all kinds of electromagnetic frequencies and all kinds of sort of, let's say, negative influences. I call them contributors to metabolic chaos. And I'll tell you how I came up with that phrase. But another big one is food. So by the way, when you do our food sensitivity testing, you got DRESS, so diet, rest, exercise, stress reduction, supplementation. Well, when you run a food sensitivity test, you're covering a stressor, a contributor to metabolic chaos, while you're correcting your diet. You know, you're getting your diet just right. And there's that we use a system called metabolic typing, but metabolic typing diet minus your food sensitivities improves your diet. And I've seen that just totally clear people's problem up. Just changing the way they ate. They have more energy, their cells work better, their body functions better, so on. But then in terms of testing for stressors, it's really cheap and easy to test for if glyphosate's in your water, for instance, and in your environment. And I live out in the country up in the hills, and I have well water, and I had to have that tested and found out something. You learn stuff when you run this. So those things you mentioned, like gluten and glyphosate, they're the easy ones. You know, it's getting people to realize that for them, a food that other people could eat is not good for them. It's actually contributing to metabolic chaos. It's why we test, you know, that saying, test, don't guess, or you know, we do an awful lot of that.
So
and
what
it really cleans things up.
What are the different types of metabolic diets? I don't know if I've heard of that.
Okay, so everyone has metabolism is just all the chemical reactions going on in your body. There's two main types. There's catabolic, which breaks your body down, and there's anabolic, which builds your body up. And they actually need to be in balance. It's okay to, you know, we're replacing new old cells with new cells all the time. So there's this balance of catabolism and anabolism. So not cannibalism. So there's catabolic and anabolic. And so that's metabolism. It's not just what some people might think of it. So you need to measure first, are you catabolic or anabolic, or are you balanced? And that's so easy to do. And from there, you run, so everything comes off of that. Are you breaking down or are you building up? And when you get past a certain age, you're more inclined to be catabolic. All the stressors, all of the things that are breaking your body down. Now, when you're a kid, you're more anabolic because they're still growing. So they're very anabolic. It's very easy to work with kids. And I've had amazing results with children because they respond so quickly to changes in diet and habits and things. So I might have lost what your question is, but
different metabolic diet types.
Yeah, so the idea of catabolic, anabolic, I had to explain that as a basis. But balance is the key. So one of the key balancing factors is diet. And the best way to think of it is your ratios of protein, fat, and carbohydrates. So everyone knows what those are. There's meat and vegetables and fat. Most meat has fat in it. So you can fat, meat, protein, and then vegetables, fruits, and what have you, for your carbs. And there's a ratio that's right for you. That's what metabolic typing is. It's what am I, and it's based on your what's called your oxidative rate, so how fast you burn fuel. Like me, I'm a very fast oxidizer. So that means that I burn fuel very quickly. It means I have to burn slow burning fuel. So what burns faster, protein and fat or carbohydrates?
Carbs are
Carbohydrates burn
faster.
faster, so I need more protein and fat to maintain this combustion rate. It's in every cell in my body. So if I eat a lot of protein and fat, I'm very balanced. I can stay. If as soon as I eat too much carbohydrate, I don't have any energy. My cells don't have energy to do their job. And you so then you start to overconsume. I have a perfect example, and I hope this is you can follow this, because this all just comes off the top of my head from 25 years experience with people one-on-one. But my cousin happens to be a priest up in Canada. I think he's a bad one, because they banished him like to way up north, where he has these he must have been hard on certain groups. But he moved up north to where his parish is. He has two parishes. They're Cree Indian villages. So Cree Indians were known when this North America was being sort of discovered a few hundred years ago, by Europeans, that they were really had the most energy of any people they'd ever seen. The Cree Indians could run across the tundra and the plain, hunting fish like for 14 hours a day, no problem. Just really energetic. And nowadays, they're all sick with diabetes. Why? Because we changed their diet. They moved in, they took over the areas. They have gold mines, copper mines. These people don't hunt and fish anymore for their natural high protein, high fat diets. They eat fucking Tim Horton donuts and spaghetti and fried chicken and stuff. They're not out there hunting and fishing. So it ruined them. When I asked my cousin, what are these your parishioners do for, like, do they see a medicine man? The first thing he says was, "Well, I'm their medicine man," because he's the priest. But I said, "No, when they get sick," and he said, "No, they're all sick. They all go to the government clinics and take their diabetes medication." Well, what happened? They quit hunting and fishing. By the way, the caribou and the salmon in the rivers are still very abundant, but they quit. They got put on little reservations and stuff, and they're eating from the corner store instead of doing what they are naturally inclined to do. That tells you that metabolic typing works. If you think a bit about it genetically, they're designed perfectly to eat, protein and fat, fish and caribou, and not much else. They don't grow anything up there. There's seasonal. I've been up there, like blueberries and some seaweed and stuff, but no. So their metabolic type is fast oxygen. They burn fast, and I happen to be the same way. But my wife, who's from the islands of the Caribbean, they didn't have caribou and salmon in the rivers. They eat a lot of potatoes, and so they're designed perfectly to eat slow oxidizer for them. She's a very slow oxidizer. So if she eats a lot of meat and fat, it clogs her up. She can't even hardly digest it. But when she eats lots of vegetables, roots, and these things that she a slow oxidizer eats, then she does very well. So we make a meal, she takes this part and I take this part, and everybody's happy.
So does it drive you nuts when you see kind of blank prescribed diets to everyone, like just eat car because the hot one right now is carnivore. Like everyone, especially it's carnivore month, world month, or whatever.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I love it, because when I first started working in that clinic, the first thing I did was take a course in nutrition. The amazing thing is the doctor who owned the clinic said, you can work on patients in between your classes. So I started investigating, interviewing. Back in the 1999, 2000, the Atkins diet was the rage. No different than today's paleo and the ancestral diets. You know, Dr. Atkins said, meat is good. Eat saturated fat and all this stuff. And I did it, and it worked for me. Mm-hmm. That's how I, that was before I knew about metabolic typing, but I knew that high protein and fat I did very well. But I started putting some of the patients of the clinic, you know, recommending that, and some did really well. Some it didn't change. Others it made them worse.
Interesting.
So what's the variable? Who's eating it?
Mm-hmm.
Whoever's eating it, that's the variable. So diets, there's no one diet that's right for everyone. There's no single food that's right for everyone. There's foods that are bad for everyone, like too much sugar and, you know, seed oils. And there's lots of things that are bad for everybody. But there's hardly anything that's good for everybody. It depends who's eating it. And the question, I think, started with the metabolic types. But before that, we're talking about just food, and that you could be sensitive to a food that everyone else does. You could be sensitive to carrots. Mm-hmm. Well, everyone knows carrots are good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not for everybody. That's why we test.
See, that actually, I did one of those gut tests, and carrots came up as an avoid food for me, and they want you to avoid it for like 3 to 6 months and retest. And I was talking to, I think it was Derek More Plates, More Dates. I don't know if you know who that is, but he's I think one of the founders of Merrick Health, and his opinion was that those gut tests, they're not really that accurate because your gut microbiome can change so rapidly. So to take a food like carrots out for 6 months didn't make sense to him. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, he's got a point. Smart guy, and you can argue the sort of logic, but let me give you a scenario. And this happened multiple times with men, with women, and with children especially. So I don't even know which story to tell, but we take a lady who was coming in, Candace, and you'll appreciate her. She was in her late 40s. She'd been exercising up to a point. She was coming in for chiropractic care, and I'd been walking her back to the treatment rooms. Each visit, and just talking to her. She wasn't a client of mine yet. And she said, I could tell she was really down one day. She had her head down. She looked angry. And, you know, me, the happy guy, I'm like, wait, what's going on? Oh, it's this weight. I'm 40 pounds overweight, and it's killing me. And it's been going on for 2 years. And, you know, I kept trying to get in there with, hey, what are we going to do? Let's do something, you know. And she just wouldn't be stopped from telling her story that she was on this medication for the hives. She got the hives, blotches all over her body for 2 years. And she'd been on this medication that made her gain 40 pounds. And it was really ticking her off and frustrating her. And before I could say it, I think, you know, I'm walking her back to get her treatment. And she's like, reading, I went to my doctor the other day. And I told him how frustrating it was to be this overweight because of the medication. According to her, he said, you can be fat, or you can have the hives, take your pick.
Oh my gosh.
And so she said, well, doctor, that's very depressing. And he said, I'll be happy to write your prescription for antidepressants.
Whoa.
And so I said to her, called her by her first name. I go, why didn't you ever try to find out why you get the hives?
Mm-hmm.
What? You know, like her head snapped around so hard, I thought she wouldn't need her chiropractic treatment that day. You know, she, what? You know, I said, we could run some tests, find out why you get the hives. And anyway, fast forwarding just a little bit, we ran a couple labs, got her off certain foods that were daily, ordinary foods. Like you said, you know, could have been carrots. It wasn't with her, but just she goes, oh my God, I'm eating that stuff every day. Got off that stuff. And within 9 days, she told me, Reed, within 9 days, I called my doctor and said, I'm not taking this medication anymore because I found out why I get the hives. And then within another 2 weeks, she was losing weight by going to the gym. And I'll finish with this, Candace. She had not worked out to a sweat or taken a hot shower in 2 years because even on the medication, she would get the hives. So you talk about changing someone's life and how good that felt by testing for foods and eliminating. So no disrespect. And you could argue the gut microbiome, and I can go there if you want. But getting off the wrong foods has done miracles like that. They're not real miracles. It's just science at work. But I had another lady, same thing, migraine headaches. I had a kid who had symptoms of AD. He was poking at the other kids and misbehaving, and the school wanted to send him home. And the mother was, I talked to the mother, and I didn't know if I could help. Run some labs, change this kid's diet and lifestyle, you know, bedtime and things a little bit. Within 3 weeks, the principal of the school called me, tracked me down through the mom and says, hey, this is a different kid. He's paying attention. He's not disrupting the class. He's not poking the other kids. And so he goes, so he recognized the improvement. But then he said, this was disheartening. He goes, what'd you put him on? You know, so as if some magic pill or drug or something. But the point I'm making is that food sensitivity testing has helped me help others in ways that are so rewarding. You know, they wanted to put that kid, who was only 9 years old, by the way, on drugs.
Yeah, that should be illegal.
It should be illegal. Yeah, his mom was like, I don't want to put him on drugs.
Yeah. So when it comes to, you mentioned that not all food is bad for everyone, but some food is bad for everyone, and not all food is good for everyone. So when we're talking, and especially with children, the synthetic dyes, for example, that's a huge conversation right now. Are there some kids that are less sensitive to those dyes, or is that one of those things that you would put in the category of no kid should have these dyes, artificial dyes?
It's a hard one. But yeah, I would say certain things, sugar and food coloring and artificial ingredients aren't good for anybody. Mm-hmm. They're only good for manufacturers who sell the stuff and want to make it appeal because it tastes good. You know, let me give you a really quick one. One of our patients a long time ago was a principal of 5 charter schools. And each day of the week, she went to a different school. And one of her things she started doing was sitting in on parent teacher kid problem meetings, you know, like a parent teacher meeting, and over behavior usually. And she started asking the child, who were, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, what do you have for breakfast? So in these quote unquote sort of problem kids, what percentage do you think were eating sugary, crappy cereal?
100%.
100%. 100% were eating crap for breakfast. And, you know, it just, these things make sense to you and I. But for some reason, parents still want what's convenient or taste. This is what he'll eat. So, you know,
it's what he eats because that's what he knows. Like, my oldest is 4. He's never had cereal in his life. He's never seen a box of cereal. And my sister's kids live a very different lifestyle. And they came over and they brought a pantry worth of stuff that he's never seen, like Cheetos, neon blue taquitos, like sugary, like Oreo, golden Oreo. And he's just looking at it. He's like, what is all of this? And he is just, I didn't want to make it a thing. It was the holidays. Like, okay, you can have a couple. And he was a different child, like off the walls, chaotic, jumping, screaming. And he's a very chill dude. And it's sad because you have parents that are exhausted, overworked, feel like they're at their wit's end. So like, I can't wake up early enough to make breakfast. So I'm going to pour this thing of cereal. And then you think you have a problematic kid. So then you drug your kid instead of just waking up and maybe it's going to sound judgmental, wake up 10 minutes early and crack a couple eggs in a pan. I mean, that's what I do every day. My kids every single day have eggs, maybe some oatmeal, some kind of like meat protein and fruit. Like that's breakfast every day. It's non-negotiable. And again, he hasn't seen a box of cereal. If I started his like journey with solids, with, you know, Lucky Charms, of course he's going to be like, oh, I don't want these eggs. Give me the sugar marshmallows for breakfast, of course, right? So you have to kind of just take the things away. And it's not to say I haven't made missteps with diet, because I'll have like these fig bars, for example. And you're like, well, they're organic. They're at Whole Foods. They're not that bad. Well, they still have like 20 plus grams of sugar in them. So they're not great. It's still very much a dessert. And then both of my kids, they would skip their meals to go to the pantry to get these fig bars. So I had to pretty much like wean them off of these and just say, we're not buying them anymore. So that way it's not a conversation. It's not like, oh, you can have one now or one later. It's just don't have the food in the house, and then watch your kid be a different kid.
You're so right. You know, it's, you got to put an adult in charge of grocery shopping. For sure.
Yes. Maybe like order, if you don't have childcare, do Instacart or Whole Foods delivers or whatever, Publix delivers. And because when you bring them with you, if you're, especially if you're going to like a regular grocery store that has all of these neon colors that are very much marketed to kids, and like all of the sweets are at the checkout aisle, it's really hard to say no when they're grabbing and just putting stuff in the cart for you. So there's workarounds, and they're not easy, and some of them aren't cheap. But I think ultimately all of these things that seem like hurdles are going to be so much better for your family, to where you're not medicating your small child. Because that's what it sounds like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden you end up there. But how many boys are put on something like Ritalin or Adderall because simply their routine is off, they're not getting enough sleep, they're watching too much screens, they're eating the wrong food, like you name the thing. So it's like, until you address all of these foundational aspects of what you're kind of loading onto the kid, you shouldn't jump straight to a drug.
Yeah, it's really it's not as complex as you might think, food preparation. But I wanted to address what you just said about the Ritalin Adderall. Back in the day, it was always Ritalin. And I mistakenly joked with this mom who was telling me about the school wants to put my kid on Ritalin. And I said, well, do you think he has a Ritalin deficiency? You know, which right now is... You know, but she didn't think it was funny. She just said, I don't want to put him on drugs. You know, just, okay, I get it. Yeah, I was only kidding. But, I mean, that shows you how you know, we could take things. But yeah, kids don't, there's no such thing as a Ritalin deficiency. Mm-hmm. Or, by the way, an Ambien deficiency or an aspirin deficiency. You can't be deficient in these medications. You mentioned, kind of equated some of these foods like Pop-Tarts or whatever with medication. They're actually poison. It's beyond medication. And a lot of medication is poison too, but so one might serve the other, but yeah, they're actually poison. They're neurotoxins, mm-hmm. if nothing else, and they disrupt the biome, the microbiome, which is your second brain. You know, you can't be healthy and happy when your other brain isn't working. You know, and it's just incredible. So we test the microbiome in every person. That's foundational, is look at the microbiome. And so many people are what they call dysbiotic. So they've lost this balance between good and bad flora. The bad flora is there for a reason. Should maybe 10, 15% of your total flora, because it has to hover. You want a good immune system that's hovering and looking for trouble. But the rest of it, that healthy biota that's in there, is for digestion and for the immune system and for all kinds of things that are very helpful. So you want a good, strong ecology, which reminds me of, again, back to the sort of saving the planet days. We each have our own ecology inside. And man, I mean, I'm doing stuff, you know, I got my desk full of stuff here, my desk stuff, and all the kitchen counters are pretty much full, and a couple cabinets full. One we call the supplement graveyard.
So supplements are tricky. There's so many, there's very little regulation. You don't know what's actually in it. How do you spot a good supplement company? one that is giving you what they're saying that they're giving you. You don't want to spend $80 on a pill and it's really not doing anything for you. So do you have like three or four that are like your favorite, everyone should be taking these, like, for example, vitamin D or K or something like that?
Yeah, well, it's actually really important to get it right. And it's more important to understand what we mean when we say supplement. And the whole concept is that your nutritional needs should come from food. So if we could get our hands on enough really good, high quality organic food, we'd be in better shape, you know. And then you could just supplement with the missing vitamins, minerals, essential fatty acids, antioxidants, and then there's herbal and some other phytonutrients and trace elements that you can enhance your diet with. So nutrition begins with diet. And supplements can be used, again, to supplement for what's missing from food. It's hard to get your hands on a lot of really good food, and it's expensive. Mm-hmm. I think it's worth the extra money on organic food, especially just to avoid the toxins that are on non-organic food. You know, we go like to Sprouts or Whole Foods here in Southern California and only go to the organic section. Like, just anything that's not any organic vegetables or fruits, we just won't even touch it. Mm-hmm. Much as I want to sometimes. You know, but you know, you go, nope, it's not organic, can't do it. So you don't want the toxic burden from some of these things. Even organic food, though, isn't grown in the most ideal. It's not grown like my grandfather's. I grew up in Canada. My grandfathers both grew. They used manure. They didn't use any artificial anything that I knew of. And so we ate really high mineral rich, vitamin rich, you know, and got our, ate lots of, you know, fatty fish, all this stuff. My mom just seemed to know even back then. I'm 70. She's still living at 93. So we must have done something right.
Oh, that's awesome. My grandma just turned 92.
That's fantastic. See, so you don't want to ruin that. You've got good genes. Don't ruin it by eating crap. So back to supplements, you know, get as much as you can from wholesome food. Mm-hmm. The less you eat out of bags or boxes, the better. That is as fresh as you can get it. But even the vegetables grown today, although they're organic, they don't have the same amount. So you need to substitute. So mm-hmm. supplement could really be substitute. Mm-hmm. You need more vitamins, more minerals, more essential fatty acids, antioxidants, and phytonutrients and trace elements and things. And, you know, they should be according to your metabolic type. It's another aspect. But for right now, just know you can substitute for what's missing in food. But mm-hmm. supplements can also be used to support somebody who's not feeling well. You know, they know they're not like they used to be. You feel like something's missing. I used to have all this energy. Now I just want to come home and drink, you know, or you need coffee all day to get through the day. You're self-medicating. Mm-hmm. So that's where a review, the labs can come in handy there. We look at the adrenals and the hormones and you see what's not what it used to be. And you can sort of, you can substitute for the vitamins and minerals, but you can support systems. You can support the adrenals and hormones. You can support digestion is critical because we don't have the HCL and the enzymes like we used to. They're not in the food and all this stuff. And you can also use the supplements to stimulate, like the immune system. Like if you're going on a trip, mm-hmm. how about taking some zinc along with you? Mm-hmm. Some echinacea and some things would stimulate the immune system, give you a little added protection. And finally, you could actually use supplements, just that general category of stuff on the shelves and pills and lotions, potions and powders and what have you. But you you can treat yourself if you have parasites or bacteria. You know, these, there's all of the, some of them are 1,000-year-old recipes. Antiparasite, antibacterial, antifungal, things like that. So you can self-treat. So I've been cheating a bit because I know the four S's of supplementation. It's the substitution, we mentioned that, the support of certain organs, the stimulation, and then the self-treatment. Like, hey, if you may not need antibiotics. Why not get a natural antimicrobial, antifungal, and try those first? If they don't work, yeah, you can go to the big guns if you need it. And I don't even blame someone for that. I'm not, what do you call it, a fanatic. No, I will use drugs if that's what's called for. But a lot of times you just go with the natural stuff. If you've run the labs, the natural stuff can be very, very good.
Yeah, I think that's always should be your start point. Like you shouldn't go straight for the A bomb, you know what I mean? So go for
That's what you
something.
said. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
my kid's misbehaving. Ritalin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that one bugs me. And then I know so many parents that their kids are they're on something. They're all boys too, but it's like you can't say anything. They made their decision, and it's very hard to admit if you maybe made one that's not the
You
best one.
know what I think they should make parents do? Try it. Go ahead, pop a couple Ritalin and see how you feel, and then decide if you want your kid on that. I guarantee you, it would end the epidemic because it doesn't feel good. It feels like you're on a drug,
Well, of course, yeah.
and you are. And people use it to get through college and stuff. I get that. It helps you study. And there's the problem is when you take a symptom and you make it disappear, you lose focus on the causal factors. Oh, that symptom's gone. Oh, yeah, okay, like let's take blood pressure. People are on medication, and it's known that after 2 years on certain you're at a much higher risk for cancer
Oh, wow.
by taking blood pressure, certain blood pressure, the
I didn't know
sartans. Look it up. It's all there. And I told you earlier, I have a show called Science Matters that I do with Dr. Aaron Gonshore, great guy, and he'll present, oh, here's a study on this or that. And so we look at it and we try to analyze, well, what's their point of view, which is to try to create a drug most of the time. And what's our point of view? Everybody's a study of one. There's no cohorts. I'm not that person. And that in some of the studies, they do a study of 10,000 people and only 10 died. Like only 10 people died. That's a good result for them. In our world, if one person died in your history, not from one test, but in your entire history as a natural practitioner, one person died, you're ruined. And you would also feel really bad and oh my God, what? So you get the point that like those studies are they're very scientific, but the rules are all made up by them. So what about our science of the evidence, the anecdotal stuff that adds up, and the study of one, like each person. In this lady, this is what happened, and that's reality, that's scientific.
Yeah, we're all so wildly different. And I think a lot of us think that getting old and aging, like you're supposed to feel like junk. Like you just slowly are supposed to start gaining weight. You're supposed to be less sexual wellness. Like at some point, it's supposed to completely go away. And I have this conversation with my father-in-law, actually. And it's so funny because he's like, well, when you get older, it's just not available. And he's not that old. And I was like, well, I know people that are in their 80s and their sexual relationship is still off the charts. Like they're able to perform, like they are healthy, they're vibrant, and he doesn't believe me. So I'm like trying to like send him this stuff and I'm like, you can feel vibrant at any age. Like people are making full careers off of it. People are spending, upwards of a quarter of $1 million to enter into certain longevity programs, into increasing like health span and lifespan. So I guess is there a place where you are supposed to just feel like junk, or is that only supposed to kind of be right at the cliff before you fall off?
Yeah, I have so many ways to kind of explain this, but symptoms aren't the problem. They're the result of the problem. So, I was back in the day in the chiropractic office, they talked about life is like a, not like a light where you could turn the intensity of the light down. They call it a rheostat. That'll turn the light down. That's not how life is supposed to be. When you hit 50, are you going to accept that, oh, well, we're going to turn it down a little bit. You can't have as much fun or enjoy, and oh, more when you get to be 80 and off at 82 or something. So it's more like a, you're supposed to burn like a candle. A candle is the same brightness when you light it as when it goes all the way down to the bottom, the same brightness, that life energy and that life value and quality and things. So then it flickers and goes out, which is would be fine with me. To die in your sleep is kind of the what old people want. My mom, again, is 93, and I visited her at Thanksgiving, and she talked to my sister and I, my brother-in-law. She and my wife was there, and she's like, I'm 93. I want one more boyfriend before I die. And I'm like, la, 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 la. I don't, mom, talk to them about, I want out of this conversation. But yeah, 93, and she wants. Just want one more boyfriend before I go.
Good for
And my
her.
dad died at 85, so it's been a while. And yeah, so I'm very pleased about that. And I'm married to someone much younger, and I could just say we work on everything and having it be good. And so you're not like that. Don't accept that. I'll get a little more scientific on it. There's a book by Roy Wolford, MD. He was the nutritionist. He teaches nutrition at University of Southern California, but he was the nutritionist for Biosphere, which were two experiments they did at the turn of the century, where they put people into a bubble and they had to grow their own food as if you were on Mars. It was kind of like a Mars experiment, and he was the nutritionist responsible for the foods and things. So he wrote a book, Roy Wolford, called The 120-Year Diet. And in that book, he did amazing, like real experiments. He's kind of the modern day Francis Pottinger, mostly working with animals, but he wrote this book, 120-Year Diet, which this will make sense. So you most people you hear over the hill, right? That expression. You mentioned that kind of in your father-in-law, the over the hill thing. Well, when does that happen? When do you? Well, at 50, it didn't happen to me. I was still doing jujitsu at 64, and I got injured, so I couldn't continue. But I let some 23-year-old beat me up. But the funny thing is that he said that you should go up to about 40, and that's when, catabolic anabolic starts to become a challenge to keep balanced. If you can keep the catabolic breaking down and the anabolic balance, you should be able to go from 40 to 80 before the natural sort of degradation. No one gets out alive. We know that, right? The body is going to break down. You're going to get catabolic to the point where you can't, you lose all vital reserve. And so, but that shouldn't happen till you're about 80, according to Roy Wolford. And it's a great study. And I got 10 years to go before I find out.
Oh, that's amazing though. So if you are let's say you're I don't know, 50, anywhere for in that range, that 50 to 80 range, and maybe you've been neglecting your health, your diet, your workout routine, and you feel like you are on the dimmer, like you are over the hill and that you are losing that light. Is there a way to go from that to getting back to the candle?
That's what we teach. That's what the labs and the natural protocols designed to just restore and return to balance. Now, everyone can get whacked. I just want to tell you things like that happened in 2020 with the big C word thing. That was unfortunate, and it taught us all that you're vulnerable. Even a really healthy person can get whacked, but you can do things to mitigate. Return to health and try not to get it again. Like just really try to keep. And I can recall periods for 10 years where I never even had a cold. And again, you do get old. Remember the catabolic anabolic balance is harder for some people than others. Genetic potential does come into it. You know, and I don't, you know, you can't change your parents or grandparents, but you can do things to mitigate. The DRESS is the only way that I know, and it's proven with tens of thousands of people to have worked.
Now, is it more complicated if the issue is autoimmune versus, you know, something that's like maybe dietary or that can be fixed with just meditation, stress regulation, something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Good. That adds a layer of complexity. You know, it's in, it's, I don't know if this sounds goofy, but it's very complex. If you study the human body, you'll never be done. You could read every scientific article from now till next Christmas. At next Christmas, you'll be 50 years behind in your reading. You know what I mean? So you can't read enough. You can, it's very complex, but it doesn't have to be complicated for the average person. And so, you know, Einstein said, he's a pretty smart guy. He said, if you can't explain it to a five-year-old, you don't know it well enough, whatever your topic is. So, you know, I don't have any five-year-old clients right now, but I do try to break it down and speak in a language where people can get it and apply it to their own lives. And so the answer is you absolutely can get in control. Remember, that was my very first concern when I first started, when I switched from environmental and conservation to health and wellness. It was, what's going on with these people? You know, like, why are they putting their health in someone else's hands and having lost that control? And they basically had their ladders on the wrong wall. They're looking to medical, which is a disease treatment model. And so that's the ladder. Well, first, you know, I'll go to a doctor and you get the little prescription. And pretty soon you climb that ladder. Well, the next thing up is surgery. After that, it's, you know, chemo. And after that, so you don't want to have your ladder on that wall. That's the disease wall. You want, and there was no prominent wall for me to get our clients and patients onto. We had to develop that wall. That became the lab work, running, you know, five labs in every person and following the dress protocol and adding in the health coaching. We were doing that before the word health coaching was even heard of. No one mentioned it. There was personal coaching and executive coaching. You didn't hear health coaching till about 12 years ago. And yet we've been doing it for 12 years already at that time.
So have you seen, this might be an odd question, but have you seen someone that maybe they're doing a lot of trauma work or EMDR therapy, things like that, and they already had some really questionable autoimmune disorders? You know, like sometimes doctors will just throw one at a patient because they don't know what it is, and the accumulation of the symptoms kind of sound like MS, or it kind of sounds like sarcoidosis, or it kind of sounds like fibromyalgia. So they just kind of give that label to somebody. And then that fluctuates over, you know, their treatment, and they're seeing these professionals, and then they start doing trauma work, and all of a sudden their symptoms start getting a lot worse. Have you seen anything like that?
I've seen them get better and worse. And so it's an important aspect. Remember, everybody's a study of one. So you're looking for that causal factor. And here's what I know about causal factors. And it's why I gave up the word. This will be heresy in our business, but I gave up the term root cause. Here's why. There's never just one. There's always multiple root causes or causal factors. The other really important consideration I don't hear anywhere else is that those causal factors are having an effect on each other. And you can't singly measure every interaction. It's hard to keep track of them, actually. That's why I just use the term metabolic chaos. And back to the trauma, you know, one of the causal factors could be something that happened. And it could actually, this is a new research out of University of California, San Diego, that causal factor doesn't even have to be there anymore. So while you're looking for root causes, you may never find that one because it's gone. But the downward spiral that it created is still working. And so that's just how the body works. So if it's some trauma that, hey, that happened a long time ago, I don't want to use the word resonance, but the metabolic effect that it initiated, the downward spiral that initiated, could still be there. So how do you deal with that? Well, there are people who, if you haven't interviewed Amy Apigian, do you know who I'm talking about?
No.
It's A-I-M-I-E, Amy. Apigian, A-P-I-G-I-A-N, Apigian or Apigian. She does, she's an MD, good friend of mine, who talks about the biology of trauma.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I think she'd be a great guest for you because she could explain it better than me. That's called a referral.
No, I appreciate it. That sounds fascinating. Yeah, I have someone close to me and they've been doing a lot of trauma work and they keep getting worse and worse and worse. And the way I look at it, just based off of the things I've read, is potentially it's kind of just like doing this dump right into her system every time she discovers something or unloads something or revisits something, and it's creating chaos in her system. So it's like maybe take a break, get back to a baseline before you keep revisiting stuff that's really hard.
Yeah, exactly. So this metabolic chaos could be looked at if you took a very calm pool of water and you threw in 8 stones, you just throw a handful of stones, each stone would create its own ring, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those rings are going to hit each other and cause this rippling where now you don't even know where the stones were thrown, which stones they were, how many stones, which is the first stone that hit the and things. So that's how I look at root causes or causal factors. They all happened or are continuously happening, and they're causing all of this chaos. Mm-hmm. And here's the guy, I teach a course in functional lab work, like that's what I do. And so from a guy who teaches a course in functional lab work, there isn't enough labs. There's no way to test all of it. I wish there was. You know, I don't know if we'll ever have the device they used in Star Trek, you know, the thing, the diagnosis. Even then, they just gave the guy some chewed up thing. It was so allopathic, but cool looking. But no, there's no way to test everything. That's why this, back to the foundational labs, hormone, immune, digestion, detoxification, energy production and nervous system balance. You could add it oxidative stress. There's other tests, but those few are what I think that's the result of 10 years of trying to help people with the original intent of I'm going to be the last person they need to see.
Oh, well, this has been fascinating. You are a wealth of knowledge. I really appreciate you for coming on the show. And that's it for this week's episode. Before you close this out, make sure that you leave that 5-star review and type a little something nice. Maybe I'll read it on the next episode. And if you want to support the podcast, you can go to chattingwithcandice.com, sign up for our Patreon where you get early access to episodes. You get to ask questions. I'll give you some sneak peeks at guests, or you can click that little link that says buy me a coffee. It goes right back into the show, helps me with editing, getting guests here, all of that. And once again, thank you so much. I couldn't do this without you. Love you all. Bye, everybody.